Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootnibblink, and I will be your host. And of course, I have your friend and my best friend, Blake Creamer, is here with me in the building. Blake, how are we feeling?
Oh my God, I'm jacked up beyond belief. Oh man, it's Apples and Genos. Worlds are colliding, and it feels right. Am I right, Nate? Come on, give it to me.
It does feel right. It feels really right. I'm pretty jacked up myself. I'm less than a week away from some personal vacation. I'm actually heading out your way, Blake. We've talked about maybe finding a space there to actually meet in person. So anybody in the Discord, be on the lookout in the next couple of weeks for a very endearing best friends photo should be coming their way at some point here. What do you think about that,
buddy? Blake? Yeah. Well, have you seen Superbad? Do you remember the end of Superbad where they're sleeping in the sleeping bags together? And he says, I love you, man. He's like, I love you too, right? You're my best friend. So I think that's kind of what we can expect right off the bat. And then we'll see what happens. You know, I don't know. But yeah, we got to make it happen. It's going to be fun.
All right. Yeah, I am looking forward to it. But another thing I'm looking forward to is getting into today's topic, which I've labeled top 10 shocking statistics for fantasy.
Shocking.
Before we get into that, though, Blake, we do have to address the personal question of the podcast. This one's pretty straightforward, though. Just what are your hobbies? What do you like to do outside of crushing fantasy hockey?
That's unbelievably personal. And I thank you to stay out of my personal affairs, Nate. All right. That's where I'm at with that. No. Yeah, I got some hobbies. Fantasy hockey being my main hobby right now. But before I got into that, I was actually in a band. I was a musician, and I did that for like 8 years. Actually did some tours, and nobody liked our music. It was unlistenable, but you know, we had fun, and yeah, it was awesome. We actually like rented out a studio for like a month one time and recorded an album. You know, it was a good time. I got to say, I miss that sometimes. And so something I did like after I had my first kid is I bought a new guitar and I started buying all these guitar pedals. And this is before, you know, before COVID and everything. So, but I had this insane guitar pedal set up and I would record these videos just of me just goofing around. And yeah, that's kind of, you know, if I had some time, you know, once the kids get a little older, I'll probably get back into doing that. You know, some guitar stuff, some music, just for me, you know, just zone out, jam, you know, I like that. So that's where I'm at with that.
That's pretty sweet. A long time ago, I was also into making music. Less so now, but it was never very good, and I definitely never made it nearly as far as you did. I played the odd pub gig, as it were, but pretty much nothing beyond that. I did do some performing arts. I was in some local theater productions
along the
way, and that was a good time. I have no regrets about that. It was really interesting. You meet some interesting people. Different side of life for sure, and I'm pretty happy that I have that in my past, but not so much anymore today. These days, having two kids and having this fantasy hockey thing going on takes up the vast majority of my time, but I have been getting into canoe camping the last little bit. I was out in May earlier this year up in Algonquin, and I'm planning another trip in September, just a couple days, maybe 3 days, a couple nights out in Algonquin again in September. I do love that. It's a really good way to just recharge the batteries, sit out there on a rock somewhere looking out over a lake and just meditate on your entire life and existence. That's a good way to zone out. So that's something I've been doing this year, and I'm looking forward to doing more of that in the future.
Dude, I love that, buddy. You played in a band. Is that right? You played in pub gigs? What was your instrument? What did you do? What kind of style here?
So I did it solo, but I did both acoustic guitar and I had a keyboard. So I did that.
Love this. Sang,
obviously, but
buddy, oh my God. You know what, when we meet up, jam session. All right. I still have some pedals. I got an amp. Oh man. We're getting the biz. That's what's happening. That, and we'll release it on Apples and Genos. What do you think, Nate? Verbal contract?
I don't know if I should agree to anything like that. I don't think the listeners would be blessed by my decaying musical prowess over the years.
All right, let's not rule anything out. Let's just say that. Okay, there we go.
All right, we won't rule anything out. But one thing we have to get into now is these top 10 shocking statistics for fantasy. I'm pretty interested. Obviously, I'm the one who put the list together, so I should be interested in this, but I think there's just some things that I want to get into that I didn't really have a good way to get into this offseason. Like, they weren't really connected in a lot of ways. They were just kind of thoughts that I had rumbling around in my head that I wanted to get out there and get out on the podcast, but I didn't have a really good way to connect them. So that's kind of what this podcast episode is about. I really want to dig into some team stats and some trends league-wide over the last number of years, and so we're going to get into that. There are going to be some player-specific things in here, too. The first one that we will get into is that the Florida Panthers had three defensemen inside the top 12 shots per 60. This is really impressive stuff in my eyes. Like, obviously, you do the simple math, like, there's 32 teams. If everybody had one of the top 32, you'd have one per 32. For them to have three in the top 12 is really, really impressive stuff. It's definitely a bit a testament to how they play the game, like their offensive style. They're taking a lot of chances. They're rushing defensemen. They're doing all those things. But I also think that they kind of just have three really good offensive defensemen. And really the biggest takeaway for me personally out of all this is that Gustav Forsling is like not that far off as an offensive talent in my mind than Aaron Ekblad and Brandon Montour. Like, I think that's a really hot take for some people, but if you look at solely his even strength numbers, it's just really, really impressive in terms of what he's able to generate, what he's able to be on the ice for, what he's clearly just doing for the team by being on the ice. He's playing a ton of minutes and still putting up these terrific rate stats. I honestly think that if Forsling was the power play one guy in Florida for any length of time, that he could put up a 60 plus point pace. I don't think that's too crazy to say. So I just want to kind of throw that out there now. If that ever happens, I want to be the first guy who said that Forsling is like a 60 plus point pace guy with PP1 in Florida. So I just wanted to get that take out there. I don't know if there's much to go off of there, Blake, but tell me what you think about these three guys. Am I a little too crazy with the Forsling take, or are you interested in this guy if that ever does happen as much as I am?
No, I love the take. I mean, imagine if you know, someone probably said that about Brandon Montour last season, right? Like, oh, this guy's pretty good. You know, like if he ever gets the reins and the keys to the team, bang. Like, look, you know, Montour, what a season this man had. Like, set, you know, what do you have? 73 points in 80 games, right? But he had a 74% power play share. Whereas, as you said, Gustav Forsling, he only had like a 23% power play share. So all his damage is being done at even strength. But it just says a lot too about like that weird coaching change that Florida did after having a momentous offensive season, just, you know, lights out, everybody's performing. And then they change the coach. Obviously Paul Maurice likes his D, giggity. you know, he likes to have them join the rush. And obviously they're shooting the lights out. Like, that seems to be a big part of what Maurice has brought to this team, right? But yeah, they have the next man up mentality. Like, if Montour goes down, you got Ekblad, you got Forsling. It's a nice problem to have. And obviously, you know, Florida had such a problem converting this season. Like, their scoring chances were insane. Their Corsi 4, like, right up there. But yeah, they just weren't converting. So I think I love the take. And yeah, if he gets any look on power play one, we're looking at 50 at least. Like, this guy's, he's good to go, and he's getting a ton of minutes still.
Yeah, right now I have Forsling already projected for a cool 23 minutes and 45 seconds average time on ice. That's mostly coming at even strength. He just eats minutes at even strength. Yep. And then obviously also on the penalty kill there. But I have him for 43 points in an 82-game season right now. I don't think that's too crazy. 13 and a half goals, like, he's gonna score a bunch of goals with the amount that he shoots. It's just really impressive stuff. And yeah, borderline elite shot production at even strength from Gustav Forsling last year, which I just wanted to have a quick shout out for here in this episode.
Yeah, before we move on there, Nate, what with Aaron Ekblad, what do you see him doing next season? Like, obviously, this is a guy this last season who was in, you know, that kind of second tier of defensemen. And with Montour taking over, and I don't see that changing, right? He played lights out in the playoffs as well. Montour was, you know, he played amazing in the playoffs. So, you know, I guess Montour will be, is he starting the season injured, or will he even start the season? Like, he had that issue, you know, after the playoffs are over. But where does Ekblad fit in this team? Like, I think we know Forsling's role. He's kind of that, you know, second or third man up. But what about Ekblad?
Yeah, I think there's a world in which Ekblad kind of bounces between the first and second power play units there, as he did at times throughout this past season. I think that's definitely a possibility. Right now I have him down for 16 power play points, which sounds like a lot, but on Florida, that's actually not insane. I have Montour down for 31, if that gives you any kind of indication. Montour is just a more efficient player, or at least he was last year. And honestly, he has been throughout his career, just in less time on ice, basically. So I kind of believe what I'm seeing from Montour in terms of the pace. I have Montour down for 69 points, which is pretty nice. And I have Ekblad down for 49, which is a little bit like, 16 and 31 power play points. So 15 points difference between them there, plus another 5 points at even strength, which is basically just Montour being slightly more efficient and getting a few more minutes, I'm projecting. That's basically the difference that I have there. Obviously, Ekblad going to be coming back from all those injuries. He had like this laundry list of injuries that he played through. Broken foot and two separated shoulders, and I don't know what all it was, but obviously he was playing through some stuff, and we don't know exactly when he'll be back and when that'll all be coming out. But I think that Ekblad will probably end up being a pretty valuable player for fantasy, but it'll be interesting to see if he's just written off because of Montour, or if there's some healthy skepticism around Montour because of the one season breakout aspect. It'll be really interesting to see what the ADP comes out to next year. I would say I'm relatively in on Ekblad the player. He's in a really good spot on a really good team. He's going to get some power play time, if not all the power play time, the way that I expect Montour will. But it is pretty hard to see an absolute ceiling for Ekblad with Montour there.
Yeah, for sure. Could be some value come draft day.
Definitely. All right, number two, Jacob Chychrun led all defensemen in power play individual scoring chances 4/60. This one is basically just a hype piece for me with Jacob Chychrun. I'm really, really hoping that we're going to get some early camp reports that Jacob Chychrun is the guy in Ottawa, that he's running that top power play, and he could have just an absolutely dominant top five type fantasy season in Ottawa, I think. I really think that power play is going to be really good next year. Josh Norris coming back kind of replaces DeBrincat in my mind. I don't think that's a big time drop off. Norris the season before was actually incredibly efficient, one of the better power play players across the entire league his year prior to this past year, where he missed the entire season. So I'm really not projecting much of a drop off for the Ottawa power play. And I think if it is Chychrun is definitely the biggest upside player that we could have there. They might give it to Chabot just because it's always been Chabot's and he's always been there and he's always been that guy. But I really think that if they take a good hard look at this in Ottawa and the coaching staff says, what's the best way to utilize the players that we have, that the best way to utilize Jacob Chychrun is to let him be an offensive force on the power play and to let Thomas Chabot eat minutes at even strength. And so I'm hoping that cooler heads prevail over there and that Chychrun becomes that power play one quarterback and that he just absolutely goes off this season. If he gets on that top power play all season long, I could easily see him eclipsing 20 goals. I don't think that would be too crazy of a statement to make. He could get there with probably like 10 power play goals and 10 even strength goals. Maybe I'm a little bit excited about that prospect. Maybe I need to be reined in a little bit. Tell me what you think, Blake.
Yeah, I'm super excited about the guy too, but it's you know, with a caveat. Like, you got obviously Chabot, which we talked about, and he's got the contract, so he's getting paid the money. Right. But why did you bring Chychrun in? Like I think they should absolutely go with Chychrun. If they're smart, they go with Chychrun because Shabbat still has mega value, you know, on Power Play 2 and then all the other intangibles that he brings. But Chychrun, I've been waiting for a 20 goal season from this guy for a while, right? And he just hasn't been able to stay healthy, or he's, you know, sitting for trade related reasons. I want to see a full season of this guy and I want him to get the keys. So, but until we know, like, I want to see what goes on in, you know, training camp and how they're running it. Right. But this is a player I'm very excited about. His periffs are good. So categories, he's awesome, but I like safer players, you know, where Chychrun's probably going to be drafted. I don't know. I like players that are a little bit safer, a little bit more proven, but I think it's all just dependent on if he gets that power play one. And you know, about like having Chychrun and Shabbat there, it kind of just kills Jake Sanderson. You know what I mean? Like any kind of fantasy value, like the guy's a stud, you know, but now he's behind Chychrun and Shabbat. Like he'll play power play two maybe, but I don't know. That really sucks. I actually just traded Jake Sanderson away in the Dynasty League. Get the hell out of my sight. Get me Jacob Chychrun in here. I love that. But it's too bad for Jake Sanderson because he looks like a stud too.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Sanderson, obviously, it was a rookie season, but he did not impress in the times that he did get up on that top power play. Definitely, there could be some situation where they told him, you know, it's your rookie year, just focus on playing defense, playing the game the right way, the rest will come, blah, blah, blah. You see that sometimes with defensemen, especially offensive defensemen, that they need some time to develop. But that was not always Sanderson's billing. Like, I remember specifically in his draft year, people talking about, yeah, this guy's going to be a really good defender, but we're not really sure about the offensive ceiling there. And then he had a big season after he was drafted. And then everybody was like, oh yeah, he also has the offensive ceiling. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe a little bit of the former was a little bit more true than we actually want to believe for us here in fantasy. And so maybe that's the way that the Senators saw it too, is that they're going to have Shabbat and Sanderson. They're going to be their top guys. And maybe Chychrun's going to be the offensive guy. That's what we're hoping for fantasy, but obviously we will have to wait and see on that one. All right. Number three, Erik Karlsson had a 67% IPP. The next highest defenseman was 58%. So obviously Karlsson, a season for the ages, just an all around ridiculous season in terms of offensive performance. Anyway, I don't know if you've seen any of the defensive metric things floating around Twitter.
Do they count that in fantasy? Yeah, I don't know.
They do not count those in fantasy. Yeah. That's not what we care about. But he definitely sacrificed some defense for offense. And why not with what they had in San Jose last year? It made for a legendary season. And we all benefited from it regardless. So the one thing obviously to say here is that whenever you see a situation like this where a player is just kind of lapping the field in terms of one particular metric, that you have to expect some regression, right? So this 67% IPP, like 58% for a defenseman, is something that I would typically predict some regression from for the following season. There are some guys who can sustain that kind of IPP, like Cale Makar, perhaps Karlsson, in a situation like he's currently in. There are some defensemen who can sustain stuff in the high 50s, but nothing in the 60s. Like, I will bet a lot of money against any defenseman repeating a 60 plus IPP season the following year. It just doesn't happen pretty much ever. So that's just a little bit of a caveat. And the one thing that I want to add to this here is that if you look through the players behind, you get a lot of big names in IPP. So that is one thing that you hear us talk a lot about IPP as like the regression statistic, right? So if someone's overperforming in IPP, then they're going to regress. But it is actually an indication too of talent. You do see that high-end players have high-end IPPs. So you'll see high-end forwards, you see the McDavids, you see the Crosbys, you see these guys with like close to 80% IPPs. And then you see the top-end defensemen, you see the Karlssons, you see the Makars, you see the Yossis up in these high 50s typically. So it is something that you can say this is an indication of talent, especially if you've seen it over multiple seasons. But you do get outlier seasons in here as well. So the top players, you do have Makar, you have Yossi, you have Shea Theodore, you have a lot of these guys, Dougie Hamilton, Quinn Hughes, Brent Burns, the names that you'd expect to see after the seasons that they have. But you also have Josh Morrissey, who I don't know how you're feeling, Blake, but I'm still a little bit on the fence about. I don't know what to believe, quite honestly, after that past season. Obviously, now they've shipped out Blake Wheeler. The scope of that change is going to change. The scope of that team, rather, is going to change with Wheeler out, with PLD being moved on from as well. What does that team look like? Can they be as efficient as they were? And particularly, can Morrissey be as efficient as he was last year? I don't know the answer to that question. It was a massive breakout last year. Pretty unparalleled across even a number of years, what he did last year. And then you have guys like Samuel Girard, who is way up there. You have Mike Matheson up here. Can Mike Matheson be that guy again in Montreal? So those are the kinds of things that you need to just evaluate for yourself here. Yes, the names that we know that we trust are up here, but what do we do with these other names up here? Is it an indication that, you know, they've taken a step and now they're a new level of player, or is this an indication that we should be expecting some negative regression for next season?
Yeah, I think a little of column A, a little of column B, but in terms of I also think it's like an indicator of even like what talent do they have around them? You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes you see like third liners with like highest IPP, you know, as well. It's like, because they're the best player on their line. And like for that line to do anything, this guy's got to drive everything. Right. And if you look at Carlson, yeah. Hey, that's what I was thinking about. Oh my God. We're simpatico, buddy. But yeah, Erik Karlsson, like he had no one. Right. I mean, okay. He had Timo Meier. He had like a reasonable first line, and maybe that power play, that first power play is reasonable. But, you know, when those guys left, he still kept up the pace. Right. Like it was just, did you ever see the Fresh Prince episode where Will Smith played basketball and the coach in the timeouts, he'd be like, okay, you guys know what to do? Okay, give it to Will. Right. So, yeah, in the first intermission, beginning of the game, like, okay, guys, we got a game plan here. You give it to EK. All right. EK 65, he's going to rush it up. You give it back to him and he shoots it in. Okay. So it's like, you know, I this is an amazing season though for Erik Karlsson, but I do think it was so high because he had to do that for them to score any goals, really, to be competitive in these games. And he can do that. Right. He's obviously mega talented guy. But one thing about Karlsson, obviously, I do think that's going to regress. I think that's common sense, even if it regresses back to that really high mark that you mentioned, the 57. If he gets traded, it's going to be, I think it's going to go even lower. Like there's rumors he could go to Pittsburgh, right? So if he goes to Pittsburgh, let's say, you know, does he even get power play one? Like look at his season that he had when Brent Burns was there, right? Yep. It wasn't even close, right? Because you got two roosters in the hen house. Right. There's only so many minutes on power play one. There's only so many touches. And I think if he goes to Pittsburgh or really any team, like he wants to go to a contender. Right. So contenders have number one D. They're not San Jose Sharks like in the basement. And this guy's just out there playing shinny. You know what I mean? Like, so I am definitely expecting a big regression from Karlsson. And definitely if he gets traded, you know, I think he'll still have a great offensive season, probably 60, maybe 70. Maybe 80 points, but you know, it's not ever going to happen like this again. And I am a bit concerned that he even gets power play one wherever he goes. Right. I think it's like a Ray Bourque situation, like get this guy on a contender and go win a cup. That's kind of what they want to do. And I did want to talk just on Josh. I was going to say Josh Norrissey. Not going to happen, buddy. All right. No. But 76 points. Damn. Yeah. Like I remember where this guy was being drafted, you know, and you're like, do I take Neil Pionk or do I take Josh Morrissey? Oh God, I'll take Neil Pionk. Yeah. He has better periffs. Like, no. Yeah. But I don't think that's not going to happen again, but I do think that Morrissey has established himself, right, as an offensive, like real weapon here. So I think, you know, 60 points might happen, you know, 55, 60 points. That might be something we can expect from Morrissey moving forward because he's established himself. And this, I really do believe this is a player who's kind of broken through a little bit, kind of like Brandon Montour, right? So I'm interested in both players, but yeah, I'm a little bit tentative on Karlsson and I think he's going to get overdrafted like crazy. Still going to have a great season, but just nothing close to this.
Absolutely. Let's keep going. Let's talk about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at number four here. His 15.87 on ice shooting percentage was the highest in the last 10 years. And quite honestly, it's probably the highest of all time. I just look back at the last 10 years. We talked about this before, but that season was absolutely ridiculous. Even like this is a guy who had a higher on-ice shooting percentage than McDavid and Draisaitl on the same team. Like, that just doesn't happen. Basically, what I'm saying is Nugent Hopkins is going to come way back. Right now, I did his projection this past week. I've got him for 29 goals and 80 points, 36 of those on the power play. I think he's going to be a great player, useful for fantasy. He's not going to shoot a ton. He's not going to score a ton. He's going to be getting a ton of assists, getting a bunch of power play points. He's going to have a role. He's going to be useful for fantasy. But if you're expecting him to come anywhere close to that 100-plus point season, I just think you're going to find yourself in for a world of hurt. When you're talking about a guy who had the highest on-ice shooting percentage season of the past 10 years, you're talking about a guy who's going to take a step backward from that point the next season.
Yeah, it's just a great thing to bring attention to, right? Like, I think it's common sense again, but yeah, like this has never been done probably, right? And at the highest in the last 10 years, at the very least. So that's coming down, right? He scored 50 points last year. All right, 50. He got 53 on the power play this last season. That's stupid. But I mean, one thing about this, though, like even 80 points, like I like that projection and it's totally reasonable, but that might be a bit high for me. I feel like just because Edmonton's power play, because they had just a historic, you know, amazing season, right? They were cooking at 32%. And the year before they were at 26, right? And it was a good power play then. So I think Edmonton's power play won't be able to maintain what they were able to do this season, right? It's an, you know, now they have every coach has the off season to try and draw up things to sort of deal with this team, right? They all just went buck wild on the power play. 53 points for Nuge is ludicrous. I think, you know, that projection I like. I think it's probably safe to say he might get less power play points than that even. Like I don't know. I'm doing projections on Nuge too. He's got to be up there. I think 30 is reasonable. Like, you know, but I just don't think Edmonton is going to have the same kind of power play as they did this last season. It'll still be awesome, but I don't think 32% is, it's like chasing performances. Right. And I think we'll all sort of expect them to do that again this year. And it's just not going to happen.
Yep. I do agree with that. We'll talk a little bit more about some of these top end power plays on a later part of this podcast, but in general, I do agree, and I do have obviously a pretty big regression from the 53 power play points to 36. Yeah, whether that's enough or not, I guess we'll see, but that's where I've got him for now. All right, clocking in at number five, Roope Hintz led the league in on-ice power play shots per 60. This is something that I wanted to draw attention to because it just kind of blew my mind a little bit when I was going through and doing Dallas projections. Is first off, that power play is amazing. And second off, Roope Hintz is kind of the engine of that power play, like even more so than Jason Robertson. Robertson is the finisher, but Hintz, like statistically, is the guy that's making it happen out there, which I just thought is something that nobody is paying attention to over there. I do think that Roope Hintz is one of the most efficient players, like honestly, like baby Draisaitl level efficiency across the board. He's a guy who typically only gets like 18 minutes. I'm just going to check what I projected him for. Exactly 18 minutes again next year. And I have him projected for 88 points on that pace. 87, 88 points, somewhere in there. 87.6 is what it came out to in the numbers. But for someone to put up 87.6 points on an expected average time on ice of 18 minutes is really, really impressive stuff. If he was like treated as like a Patrick Kane or a Leon Draisaitl or somebody like that who skates these wild 21, 22 minute nights, if he ever got to that point, like this is definitely a 100-point player just on the basis of his efficiency alone. I have him projected for 17.3% shooting percentage next year. Like, that's just a ridiculous number to put on any player in terms of shooting percentage, and I usually don't. Like, there are very, very few players that I project for that kind of shooting percentage, but I could not go lower with Roope Hintz. Like, I felt like I was being conservative putting him at that point. So I just wanted to shout out Roope Hintz and say that he is probably one of the most underrated players in the entire National Hockey League, in my opinion.
Buddy, I love it. I love that you're drawing attention to this because Hintz was, he was drafted over like around 120. His ADP was something stupid like that, like 130 or something, except Nate drafted him in the third round.
Auto picked him.
All right, there you go. I had to do it, but I mean, it's an auto pick, everybody. All right. But it worked out. All right. This man's a legend. Yeah. My God. Nate knew something we don't, everybody. He's doing stuff in the background. All right. He does that. But yeah, Hintz. This is a great piece here. I love it. Players like this scare me. Like not Draisaitl, but I mean, maybe Draisaitl 5 years ago or 3 years ago, where you're like, how can he keep doing this? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Right. Like 20% this man shot last season in 73 games. So that's very consistent. You know, it was 17.4 the season before. So I just, if that efficiency goes down, the points go way down. And so that's scary to me in fantasy, but I agree with you. I think 17, whatever you did there is conservative. Like he's hitting a moment here with Dallas. He's on an amazing line. They have an amazing power play and they're all back and good to go. And they're all like Jason Robertson's a year older, a year better. You know what I mean? He's in his prime. Hintz is in his prime. So I like the player a lot and I'm interested to see where he slots in ADP. Plus, remember Rupe Hintz's playoffs. Oh my God. If they would have made it another round, this guy would have been your Conn Smythe winner, probably, you know, or at least the playoff leader. So Rupe Hintz, he does that. So, and in 18 minutes, yeah, get him 20 minutes on the ice, please. If you care about fantasy hockey, you'll put this man on the ice for 20 minutes. Come on, do us a favor.
All right. Rupe Hintz, now heretofore known on the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast as Baby Draisaitl. Book it.
Baby Dry. We like it.
All right. Let's get into some team stats here. With number six, we are going to talk about five teams that separated from the pack in terms of power play efficiency. I don't actually have like a specific statistic to bring up here. I know that's the theme of the episode, but when I was going through projections, and then when I saw Hintz there, and I was like, man, he really is one of the best power play players in the entire league. And I went back and I compared him to a bunch of other elite players across the league. And if you go and you look at basically any of the chance for metrics, you start to see a lot of the same teams pop up. And so I went into the team metrics and I started looking across the power play numbers for each of these teams. And it is the same teams keep popping up. So those five teams, I would say, are Edmonton, the New York Rangers, Toronto, Dallas, and Florida. And interestingly, they didn't all do it in the exact same way. Toronto was very high in scoring chances for. They were third in the league in scoring chances for per 60 on the power play, but they were middle of the pack in Corsi for per 60. So definitely they are being very selective with their shots. But we know, if we know anything about Toronto, it's that they've got a lot of guys who can put the puck in the net and are very efficient at doing so. So that makes sense just from a stylistic perspective. The other teams were a little bit more conventional in terms of just generating a lot of chances and converting on a pretty high percentage of them with the talent that they have. The one outlier there is Florida, which did not convert on a lot. They were actually towards the bottom end of the league. They were like, what is this? 1, 2, 3. They were ninth from the bottom of the league in shooting percentage, despite having terrific metrics across the board. That looks like an outlier to me in a big way. And part of the reason why I feel pretty comfortable projecting guys like Montour for big seasons, guys like Barkov I'm going to be back in on, guys like Sam Reinhart I'm going to be back in on next season. Partially just because this power play has the potential to honestly be in that Edmonton stratosphere, that Toronto, that New York Rangers stratosphere. And it just didn't get there last year, but it didn't seem like it was for a lack of trying on their part. So I'm really interested in what that Florida power play could look like last year. I have it projected for a healthy bounce back, but I honestly think there's probably even more upside beyond what I'm projecting it for. And that's pretty exciting for any Florida players. And then obviously we do have the Oilers in here with that ridiculous 19.7 shooting percentage, which is one of the highest numbers of the past number of years and is very likely to regress. The Oilers have like been obviously in the top like five of shooting percentage on the power play for like the last 5 years with McDavid and Draisaitl there. But even with those guys in tow, I do think that 19.73 probably a little bit hot that they were running there, and pretty likely to come back down more into that 17% range or somewhere around there. any of these teams that you're interested in, Blake? I obviously threw a bunch of stats out there, but any of these teams that kind of pique your interest, things that you might see as changes for next season from these kind of elite power play teams?
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I think you hit it with the two teams that are interesting, right? Which is the Oilers and Florida. You know, there are some other teams too. And I don't know about the power play because I haven't looked it up, but teams like New Jersey, just with their chance generation, but the low conversion rate, you know, and Florida was big on that as well, right? And yeah, I'm so with you. I'm in on all those players again. And I was in on them last year too, because I was holding on. I'm like, yeah, I'll keep Sam Reinhart on my team for the entire year. Or, you know, and he ended up being okay, but these guys are going to pop the hell off at some point. You know, we could have another Nuge situation here, right? Like an RNH situation where some guy just goes bananas. So yeah, I'm very interested in Florida players. I think they were just 1 year removed from an amazing offensive season. And then they get a new coach in there and, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, they just weren't converting. They were snake bit for large parts of the season. And then in the playoffs, they figured it out until it really mattered. And then they, you know, crapped the bed, but that's fine. And then Edmonton. Yeah, I do think that's going to regress, but not really to a level that's going to matter that much for, you know, like it's still going to be an amazing power play, but yeah, Florida is the really key one there. I think that's like 12.3%. That's stupid. You know, like yep. What are they doing? Put the puck in the net, boys. Come on.
Yeah. I think that this is especially something that doesn't get factored in a lot of fantasy analysis. I don't think this factors into a lot of people's projections. I know, like, I do my projections at a player level as well. I assume that a lot of people do it that way, where they build it out player by player. They're not really necessarily looking at the team overall context first. But if you look at it player by player, you should be able to at least see where that power play was doing last year with them on the ice. You should see their on ice stats. You should kind of get an idea for how that went and see how they related to the other players who were on that top power play unit and whether they were kind of a net benefit or a net subtraction to that top power play. And so I feel like people who aren't taking that into account, if they, even if they're looking at just the base shooting percentage here, and someone like Sam Reinhart, where you see that shooting percentage, you're like, oh, maybe that's just who he is. That's who Sam Reinhart is. But you're not factoring into account that this power play should be a lot better next year. And you're not taking that extra shooting percentage boost into account and how that will cascade down to Reinhart and his points and the points that he's going to walk into just by virtue of being on that power play. I think you're doing yourself a disservice if your projections don't take that into account.
Love it.
All right. Number 7, the New York Islanders had the second worst power play shooting percentage in the league at 10.42%. Anaheim was the worst, which is probably less surprising to people. But I honestly think, like, the Islanders get crapped on a lot, but they took a big step in terms of their underlying stats offensively last year from where they were previously, where it was just like grind. And I still think they have this kind of like reputation around the league that they're still like a Barry Trotz team, when they very clearly are not, from the underlying numbers and the way they played the game last year. And in particular, I think that the power play is going to take a bit of a step next year. You get Horvat in the building for a full season. He actually had a good stretch with Barzal to start, and then things kind of went sideways. I do think Noah Dobson is trending towards becoming one of the better power play defensemen in the entire league. So I just think that they have what it takes to have a good power play unit there. They have the shooter, they have the playmaker, they have the bomb from the point with Dobson. Like, they have the makings of a really good power play unit there, and I just feel like it can't continue to be one of the worst in the league. They're going to get new coaching. They're going to figure this thing out a little bit. Like, it doesn't have to be much better, right? Like, if they just regress towards the middle of the league here, get up from a 10.4 to in the middle of the league, like you talked even about New Jersey, they were at 14% last year. You add that extra 3.6%, and you're going to see some much bigger numbers on the power play from a bunch of these players. I think that could get pretty exciting. You see a guy like Brock Nelson, who Blake loves, that he could potentially get up into that point per game region if he had a pop-off season on the power play. I know Blake would just absolutely love it if that happens. So that's just a piece there on the power play percentage. When I was looking at these bottom ranked teams, the Islanders really stood out to me as a team that could pop off a little bit. Maybe not pop off is the right term, but they could definitely take a big step forward from where they were.
get to the middle. You know, don't be dead last. Like, they were dead last in power play percentage. Guys, come on. You know, first season with the new coach, that's fine. I totally agree with you. Noah Dobson's a player that I'm all in on for sure this upcoming season. He's a player I'm looking to get because I think you'll be able to get him at value, right? Because of things like this, right? Worst power play in the league. Yeah, I'll take the quarterback on that. He got 18 power play points last year. That's okay, but I could see this guy getting 25, right? I think he should get something like that. And, you know, 55, 60 points for Noah Dobson is kind of what I'm thinking. So I haven't done my projection on him yet, but yeah, I mean, Bo Horvat, get the hell out of my sight. You're dead to me, but, you know, he should make it better. You know, they need a full season with him and Barzal together. That's fine. And then the grumpiest man on earth, Brock Nelson, if he got a point per game, he wouldn't change his facial expression. It would be the exact same, just, you know, like call it elevator face. You make that face when you get out of the elevator and someone else is there and you look at each other and you make that flat mouth. And then you say, oh, right? That's Brock Nelson, right? I have to say it every time because, you know, that's his persona, right? That's
the GMOE, the grumpiest man on earth.
Yeah, grumpiest man on earth, all right? He's no Baby Dry. Let's agree on that. But, I do think Islanders, big-time positive regression, you know, like I said, to the middle of the pack at the very least. Horvat, I think he, you know, he was redlining last year. He's not going to have a season like he had there. I expect him to go back around 60. But I think Barzal could pop off a little bit, right? I think he's going to be their guy there. So I'm excited about the Islanders' power play. That's a weird thing to say, but I'm here for it. All right? Noah Dobson, let's go.
Definitely. All right, number 8, even strength shooting percentage, and this is league-wide, but even strength shooting percentage has continued to trend upward over the last 5 years. So I'll take you back through here. 8.78% back in 2018-19, then 8.8% on the dot, 9.04, 9.22, 9.32%. So last 5 years, you've seen this very distinct trend where you've seen it climb by over 0.5%. Like, this is a pretty significant number. Like, you're dealing with... I'd have to do some mental math here, but I'm going to say it's somewhere in the terms of 7 to 8% increase in relative value. I'm doing math here on the fly, but if you compare 9.32% to 8.78%, I'm saying that you're gaining like 7 to 8% somewhere in there, I'm guessing.
I concur with that, Nate. Right. I concur.
All right. Thanks, Blake. Basically what I'm trying to get at here is that this is a trend league-wide. That scoring is up, that shooting percentage is up. This is happening. If you look at the shots per game, it's actually gone down in that same time frame. So back in 2018-19, it was 52.5. It's been 52, 49.8, 52.6. And then last year, it was 51.3. So that might just be a little bit of a minor blip last year, but it was actually down last year relative to 5 years ago. But then you see the scoring chances for per game. That has come up in a big way. 45.4 back in 2018-19, then 45, 43.4, 48, and 49.3 this past year. And what that says to me is that teams are being a lot more conscious about where they're shooting the puck from. At even strength, they're not just getting into the zone and throwing pucks on net, that they've started to realize that there's these higher danger chances that matter in terms of actually scoring chances, that these low danger shots are probably just throwing the puck away and allowing the other team an easy exit of the zone. So I really think that this is a trend that's going to at least hold, if not continue even further up. And I think it's one of the reasons we see more scoring around the league in the last number of years. And I think that that's a trend that we can expect to continue. And again, I'm going to get into the projection side of things. What that means for me is that I'm actively weighting recent numbers a little bit more. So when I look at players' numbers over the last 5 seasons or something, and I try to see where their baseline is. When I'm seeing that player had a baseline and then that baseline has taken a step in the last year or two, I'm actively choosing to disregard a little more the previous seasons and regard a little higher the last season, because I think that this is an actual indication of a league trend and coaching league wide. And so I think that that's something that we can expect to continue, that players are just going to be a little more efficient with their shooting and they're going to actually just get more scoring chances overall, and they're going to be more efficient and get more goals as a result. If you take a look at the goals for per game, that has also gone up over the last number of years. at even strength, 4.61, 4.58, 4.50, 4.85, and then 4.78. So you kind of see a plateauing between last year and this year in terms of the actual goal scored at even strength. And so I think that really it all boils down to these teams are just getting better at where they're shooting the puck from. They're getting more efficient with their chances that they're able to get. And they're, yeah, just kind of treating each opportunity to get into the offensive zone with a little bit more care and a little bit more selection. And it's resulting in more goals being scored. And so when I'm thinking about that, I actively want to be thinking that the most recent seasons are probably needing to be weighted a little more even in my analysis when I'm thinking about what this player could do next year. So I don't know if you got anything to add on that, Blake, but I just thought it was a really interesting piece that's kind of emerged for me as I've been working through my projections and trying to understand where the league is going and where the league's been.
Yeah, no, I don't have much to add, but it's nice to know that you're kind of taking that into consideration with your projections, and it makes total sense, right? Like if you look at the last 5 years and you see a specific trend on more than one statistic, it's like, yeah, something's going on, right? And I'm interested in what that is. Like, have you ever looked into like if it's chances on the rush, like rush chances? Maybe like are some more of these chances? Because sometimes even when I'm watching hockey, I feel like, and it sounds weird, it sounds like I'm an old man, but it's much faster than it used to be. You know, like it seems really fast, and there's a lot of like it's north south in a lot of ways, right? I've just noticed that occasionally, and I'm wondering, like, I'd be interested to see, is there more rush chances, like more odd man rushes? Like I'd be interested to see all that, but yeah, coaching for sure. Like something's happened. There's been a tweak there, and yeah, these things are trending upwards.
Yeah. I haven't looked into that specifically, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least, to be honest. I think I've seen a lot of writing from kind of analytics level writers, analytics focused writers that, yeah, rush chances are some of the most efficient chances that you can generate. And so playing into that and playing to gain odd man rushes and things like that and get chances off the rush is pretty efficient. And so there's probably a good element of that where they're willing to take getting turned away in the neutral zone one or two extra times in a period if it means that they get one or two extra odd man chances and they get those rush chances that they're valuing more.
I wonder about officiating too. Like if it's been a bit stricter, right? And maybe, you know, it's a little looser out there. It's not as like obviously it's not clutch and grab like play, you know, McDavid's going off for 153 points, but you know, I just wonder about officiating if that's become a little looser or if they've changed certain things with the referees, that might make a difference as well.
Definitely could be. Lots that we could get into. I'd love to have just unlimited time to dig deep into every single stat, but unfortunately gotta draw the line somewhere, Blake. Maybe we can
let's keep talking about it for another 45. What do you think, Nate? Let's
do it. All right, in lieu of that, we will move on to number 9 here, which is the league-wide power play shooting percentage rose to 14% last year. In the 4 years prior, it varied anywhere between 13.47 to 13.66%. And this also comes in a year where teams took 6.3% more shots on the power play, and it resulted in 9.5% more power play goals last year than the previous season. And so what do we do with this, right? If you're just looking at shooting percentage as a quote-unquote luck metric, as we like to say around here, then you would say that this is an outlier season. Like it's been pretty consistent the 4 seasons before. Probably just an outlier season. We should regress it back. Power plays across the league should regress back. We should not expect this to continue. They did take more shots on the power play, which is obviously a positive. More shots means more chances, which generally means more goals. But can we really expect that shooting percentage increase is something that we can really bank on? And so at a base level, you would say no. And that was my first thought when looking at it. But I think that there's a little bit more to this. But first off, Blake, I want to get your input on this. When I'm looking at this, I'm looking at this over the last number of years, and I'm just trying to draw that line, right? Draw that baseline and then look at this outlier. So, but what I think is important about this is that I don't just leave that at face value, right? I say, right. Oh, look, shooting percentage on the power play went up last year. Why could that be, right? You got to take it that next step further. You can't just say, oh, it went up, so that means it's going to go back down, because all these things must remain the same every season. There's no change in the league year over year. We can't look at it that way. So that's what I think is important. And I think it's something that we'll continue to talk about. But yeah, I think on a base level, what we should be looking at is, where are these shots coming from? Are they getting more shots? What is really driving this additional shooting percentage? And can we view it as sustainable? Should we just immediately throw it out? I don't know if you've had any situations, Blake, where you've looked at a stat in the past and you've been like, oh, wow, that's definitely going to regress. And then it didn't. And then you're like, man, I wonder why it didn't.
Right.
But that's one of these things that I'm trying to force us to think about, basically, right, is to think about, is this just a very clear cut, definitely going to regress next year? Or is it a situation where we should actually be saying, no, this is the new norm, and how can we identify that?
Yeah, that's a good question, my man. This is something I'd have to dig into a little more, but I mean, right off the bat, I wonder how much, like a team like Edmonton, their insane power play percentage and conversion, like that one team having such an amazing season, that is going to raise that number, right? Just one team having an amazing season. But I'm looking at teams, you know, from last year and this year, and I mean, there were two teams last year, Toronto and St. Louis. They both had 27% on the power play. Like, that's pretty damn good. You know what I mean? So I don't even know if you can say that. So it's just something to watch, but I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. One thing I remember when I was watching hockey, like, I don't know, years ago, is when teams on the power play started using that zone entry where they would skate up and then they would drop it to the guy who's going full speed and he would take it in. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And like, all of a sudden, all the teams started using that for zone entries. And now every team pretty much uses it to get in, right? And I'm wondering, like, I don't know, but I'm wondering if something like, you know, some X's and O's in the zone, you know, in the offensive zone on the power play, if there's been something created similar to that where players are kind of, you know, doing something consistently and converting at a consistent rate. But I mean, I'm just guessing at this point, but yeah. It seems like someone's made an adjustment and yeah, it's, I'm interested to see where it goes next season as well. I don't know. What are your takes on this?
Well, that kind of leads me into the 10th point here. I was kind of leading the answer here. So the 10th point here is that I actually think that this power play efficiency improvement looks sustainable. And the big reason why is that there were 15% more scoring chances for on the power play last year. So I talked about 6.3% more shots, but 15% more scoring chances for on the power play last year. And that's what I really think is driving this shooting percentage increase. Basically, when I think about shooting percentage, I like to think of it a little bit as a function between shots and scoring chances for. So I like to think about that ratio between shots and shooting percent and scoring chances for to create that shooting percentage. Obviously, if you're getting more legitimate scoring chances, then you would think that your shooting percentage should be higher. And if you're getting less scoring chances relative to your shots on goal, then you would think that your shooting percentage should be lower. And so when you see a situation like this where suddenly there's a ton more scoring chances, I think honestly that power plays have just gotten better. That across the league, there's just been more people analyzing this and they've said, okay, this works and this is really hard to defend against. And power plays have just gotten better and penalty kills have not caught up. Now, you could say that maybe next year penalty kills catch up, but it's a long season and there are coaches who literally it's their only job to fix the penalty kill and make it better. And that's their job for the full season. They weren't able to do it last year. I don't really see a reason why they'd be able to do it next year. I do think that this is something that's going to continue. And I'm buying into this league-wide power play increase in production. And so for that reason, I'm really driving that down into my projections again, where I'm believing players who have a little bit more efficiency on the power play this year. I'm believing that efficiency a little bit more, believing those inflated shooting percentage numbers a little bit more. And yeah, just basically assigning more weight to their past season, because I think that really power plays have just kind of figured this thing out a little bit in the past year, and I'm expecting that to be something that continues. And again, I can't stress this enough, but if the projections that you're not using, that you're using does not actually weigh this, these kinds of trends, and does not think about it in this way, if they're just using a blind model that's not using league-wide statistics or not using even team-level statistics and how efficient those power plays can or should be based on their the amount of chances that they're generating and where those chances are coming from, if that analysis is not being incorporated into the projections that you're using, I think you're putting yourself at a fairly significant disadvantage, because you're going to get a lot of weight on seasonal data from like 3 years ago that is frankly irrelevant for the season upcoming, in my mind, in a lot of cases. So I wanted to, yeah, I kind of led the answer there to get to this point with the 10th one here. But I do really think that it's an important point, something that's come up for me as I've been doing the projections, and something I wanted to get out there.
No, I love that. I hope that's true, because that's going to mean blast off for all our power play performers this upcoming season. And I'll tell you what, buddy, if Boone Jenner gets 20 power play points, I'm going to legally change my first name to Gino. All right. Book it. Oh my God. It's happening. All right. Let's go. Nate, you with me? This is a verbal contract. All right,
verbal contract.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, on that note, I think that's all we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats that you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, a terrific free resource that you should be using yourself. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for this podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. And that's it, folks. Much love.